Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. If there are any themes that fiction readers have warmed to in recent years, they would include Paris and bookshops, sometimes bookshops in Paris.
But none of them have woven Milwaukee into that mix, well, until now. Wisconsin novelist Liam Callanan's new novel features a Milwaukee woman married to a writer who suddenly goes missing. She and her two adolescent children go looking for him, a journey that leads them to buy a bookshop in Paris.
What do they find? Well, that is contained in the pages of the novel Paris by the Book, which is out tomorrow. Liam Callanan, who is an occasional Lake Effect essayist, joins us in the studio today to offer a preview. Liam Callanan, great to see you.
Thanks so much for having me on.
And congratulations on the new book.
Oh, thanks. It's been a fun ride so far.
Well, good. as it should be, I would hope. When did you first go to Paris?
I first went to Paris when I was in college. And it left a wonderful impression on me, of course. But I didn't get back to Paris until years later with my family. And so I think the first time that I was able to go with my kids, it was probably in 2012 or thereabouts. And like many Milwaukee families, we looked up come springtime and realized that we needed to definitely have a spring break. And I was looking at flights to Florida and hotels there, and they were awfully expensive. And then I saw a Paris flight advertised come across, and I said, wait a second, we could go to Paris for less than it would cost to go to Florida. And the truth was, we could go for much less. And so I redirected our efforts, and off we went to Paris. And the weather was exactly like it is on the east side of Milwaukee where we live. It was cold and wet and rainy, but it was wonderful. And my girls were captivated by the city. And we wandered around town exploring nooks and crannies, guided a lot by their obsession and fascination with a couple of children's books, the Madeline series from Ludwig Bemelmans, and then The Red Balloon, which is also a film by Albert Lamourisse. And so exploring all those places really just kind of opened up the city in a new way to me. And on the last day of that trip, we went into a little English language bookstore that was kind of in the process of closing down, where it appeared, we didn't know that at first, but the place was kind of a very picturesque mess. And as we were checking out, the woman took a long look at us and said, do you think you'd like to buy the store? And she was half joking, but only half. And she thought we might be the right sort of family because our daughters clearly love books and I love books. And I was a writer, and so she thought we might be a good match. And for a long afternoon as we walked away from that store, we wondered if we might be a good match. We were trying to calculate exactly how long it would take us to lose our entire life savings in Paris. And we thought we would have a good 8 months before it all went south. Many people subsequently offered to work for us for free in the store, but no one ever offered to give us money to to buy the store. And so we didn't buy it. But in this new book, I do get a bookstore in Paris. And so that's just one of the wonderful ways that fiction opens up new worlds for you. You can kind of like write your way there a little bit like, was it Milo in The Phantom Toll
Booth? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Kind of drew himself forward. So I think that's, I'm looking forward to that too. Or
Harold, exactly.
Harold and the Purple Crayon. Yeah. he drew the path forward, and I was doing that in this book as well.
You mentioned The Red Balloon, and I certainly remember the film The Red Balloon when I was young. I have these kind of sepia-toned memories, partly because I'm sure the print I saw of the film was so faded in some at some level. But as you describe, The Red Balloon figures prominently in this book. It occurs to me that maybe the memories aren't so much faded colors as it was that was what the film actually looked like. It is a Paris that is very gray except for this balloon.
It is. It's fascinating, the story of the Red Balloon itself, because it came out in the mid-50s, and it won an Academy Award for Best Screenplay, which is ironic because it's probably only 30 words of dialogue in the whole piece. It's only 30 minutes long. And it's hypnotized a generations of American kids, especially in the 70s and 80s when thousands of copies were distributed in American classrooms and people would always watch it during recess. And, you know, it sounds like you're like me. It was just absolutely captivated by this Paris. And I've always thought it was a strange film to captivate you by because it's a pretty bleak and gritty and gray Paris. But I do think that for a certain sort of artistically minded soul, that it kind of appeals to us all the more because it feels real in a way. It feels like we're not seeing Paris through rose-colored glasses. We're actually getting some sort of a real Paris. But of course, it's just another version of the Paris, of a Paris myth. And so if anything, that kind of notion of kind of a gray and gritty Paris also appeals to some sort of deep part of us that we want it to be, you know, we want to be the one to kind of go over there and fix it. And I think that the way the red balloon haunts people, I think is in part because of that. It kind of plucks some sort of longing deep inside us, which matches that gray and red landscape.
And in contrast, there's the Paris of the Madeleine books,
right,
which is much...
much sunnier,
yeah,
and like literally sunnier, because he's got a sun in a lot of shots. Although, to his credit, he does paint a page or two of them wandering through the rain. But those are kids' books. That's for a younger set. Although really not. I mean, the Red Balloon goes pretty young too. But so the Madeleine series is, to my mind, it's just kind of like painted with a lot more joie de vivre, I guess we would say. There's a lot more dash and color and style, and it's sunny. And I think between the two of them, between La Maurice and Bemelmans, between the Red Balloon and the Madeleine books, I mean, that's how kids went to France. I think that's how a lot of people still go to France. And I mean that metaphorically, but also, like, literally. Like, I think that those books take many, many people to France just because they're transported there. And so it's two different ways of looking at a city, is how I claim it in the book. And so my book kind of joins that conversation where, you know, this young woman from the east side of Milwaukee is going off looking for her husband, who's just abjectly disappeared from their house one day. And she gets some clues that lead her to believe that they might be going, that he might have disappeared to Paris. Other people think he just disappeared into the lake because he left absolutely no trace. So
he's kind of a tortured writer, if I can call him that.
Which is odd because I don't know any tortured writers myself, and I certainly am not one myself. But there's a certain type, and he's a tortured writer, and who also wrote children's literature. And so he was a big fan of both of these artists. And what he liked about them, which is kind of what I like about La Maurice and Bemelmans, is both of them were really complicated individuals. And so is Leah, the narrator of my book. She finds her husband Robert's pretty complicated. So off they go to Paris to kind of search for him. But then Paris itself turns out not to be quite what they expected, and they discover all sorts of things that surprise them along the way.
How did Leah emerge as your narrative voice?
That was a really interesting process. This was the book started a totally different way. I had written it in third person. It was from the husband's perspective. And it was there was a long part in Milwaukee. And then one day I was sitting down to write, and I stared at my computer for a long time. I'd reached kind of a pause point in the narrative. And something that I often tell my students, I teach writing. One thing I often tell my students is if you ever get blocked, just open up another door and try it a different way, and maybe try switching point of view. So I thought, oh, okay, I'll do that. Today I'll write in the wife's point of view just to kind of see what she's thinking about. Well, it turns out she was thinking about a lot. That day she thought about 1,000 words, and the next day 5,000. Then suddenly I had about 25,000 words all in the wife's perspective, and I thought, she is the most interesting character I've got, and she also has a lot more to say. And so I just hung on for the ride at that point. So she, very much a scene stealer, she wandered into the text and took it over. And a couple hundred thousand words later, she's in charge.
And as we get to know her, she has always wanted to go to Paris, but the only Paris she has been to in the past is Paris, Wisconsin. Both Paris, Wisconsin's.
Yes.
At a very early, maybe ideal moment in her marriage to Roberts.
That's one of the things that fascinated me, is that we do have a Paris, Wisconsin, just south of Milwaukee, actually. And I think that it's not far from where the new Foxconn plant will be. It's just off to the west of 94 if you're heading down to Chicago. And then there's another Paris, Wisconsin. At least the maps say that there's another Paris, Wisconsin out in the southwest of the state. But I couldn't find a sign out there. One of the things that struck me about both Paris, Wisconsins, and for that matter, these notion of all the Parises across the United States, there are more Parises in the United States than any other foreign capital. And I feel like this is a place that people have been dreaming of for a while. So there's a Paris, Wisconsin. There's certainly Paris, Texas. There's a Paris, New York. Supposedly, actually, the Paris, Wisconsin was named for the Paris, New York. I like that they weren't dreaming too big down there. They didn't want to presume to be named after Paris, France, but Paris, New York was a safe bet. But it just reminded me of kind of the thing that we do, which is to dream of being in a different spot, but then somehow to try and recreate and tend to that myth in our own backyard. And so I was fascinated by that. At one point, the characters take a world tour, but they do it all within the state of Wisconsin. So they go down from Luxembourg up north of Milwaukee. And
Belgium's up there as well.
Yeah, Belgium and Cuba City and Paris and the other Paris. And, of course, there's New Berlin. So there's all these places you can go. And I just like this idea that people are kind of constantly tending to these stories outside themselves. And it turned out to be one of the things that my book was about.
Paris, the one in France anyway, is the setting for so many great works of literature. How well do you feel like you had to know it to credibly represent it, to do it justice as it is, as opposed to this, you know, idealized Madeline version that maybe we got when we were 5 or 6?
That was the most terrifying aspect of the whole thing, was because I was entering – my first novel was set in Alaska, and fewer people know Alaska as well as Paris. And Paris belongs to everyone, particularly Parisians. And so it was a big challenge for me to get right. And I have not lived in Paris. I visited many times, and I visited a few times more during the drafting of this book. And so every day that I would go to work on this, I would try to go to Paris in the sense that before I started my writing day, I would start with some language review, like French language review, just to kind of get French in my head. I listened to these wonderful sound artists. Luckily, the internet is a wide enough place that there are people who literally just wander cities, particularly Paris, with a ambient mic on and just capture the sounds of the scene. And so I would put my headphones on. I would download a 2-hour file of someone who was walking across Paris. That Paris does not fill with wheezing accordions and people selling flowers.
It's not all Edith Piaf songs.
No, it isn't. I mean, there's a couple people, but otherwise it's not. It's, it's Chilean pan flutes, and it's that two-tone European siren that sounds so distinctive. It's motos buzzing by. It's tiny little diesel trucks. It's people kind of shouting as they try the buses that honk and horn. And I realize, and that just put me in mind of, like, I want to make sure that the Paris that is here is real in the sense that it's an actual, like, urban place that people will recognize. So it's interesting. I had some people in Paris read the book, and it was interesting that they would disagree and agree over different things. Some of them would say, this is exactly like Paris, and then other would say, like, it was not. They were talking about the exact same thing. And I thought, well, you know what? I think I've got it right then. If they're disagreeing, then all the facets of Paris have been covered.
Well, and your book is being distributed and published in a variety of places, but at its heart, you know, this is an American whose experience. I mean, Leah is really going there for the first time, and so this is an American experiencing it versus a German person versus an English person.
Exactly, and versus a French person.
Right.
So it's a very And so I make no claims for a universal Paris experience. I think it's very authentic to her experience, and I think her expat experience over there is to kind of see Paris through a very, in some ways, narrow window, because she hasn't mastered French yet. She spends the book trying to learn it better, which is not unlike myself. And
her daughters get it faster than
she
does.
Her daughters get it faster than she does, which they assure me up at the Alliance Française, where I've been studying, that happens very familiar. The kids get it, and the parents trail along behind. And so that's been my experience. But in her case, I think she also finds that, expat life can be really lonely when you don't share the language, and life in a big city can be really challenging, especially when navigating the bureaucracy of a place like Paris. And so I think that was part of what I wasn't attempting to provide a real Paris so much as I was attempting to provide a Paris that was true to her outlook.
And at one level, she is there because she is looking for her husband, but she is looking for something bigger, too.
She is. I think she's looking for a lost piece of herself, not to sound too romantic about it. But I think that when her husband disappears, she realizes that more is at stake than her marriage. I think she's also realizing that her own definition of what she thought and life was going to be like, adulthood, parenthood, And what sort of dreams that she has. It's something that she goes through the book trying to sort through. Like, what does it mean to be a mom? What does it mean to be a bookstore owner? What does it mean to be an American in Paris? She's very conscious of her nationality and status a lot of times. And then what does it mean when a place like Paris or the life you thought you were going to lead doesn't exactly turn out to square with that? How do you navigate the gap between the reality and myth that you had? I think it's one of the things that really obsesses her in the book.
Well, Liam Callanan, I will have you know that as I was reading this book, I was busy pricing out flights to Paris, so job well done.
Oh, excellent. Good. I should put a coupon on the back for that. It really is. It's people, I've become a new booster for Paris, and I think that not that Paris needed much more boosting, but I think people think of it as it's unreachable. It's quite reachable. Especially for people who've tuned into Lake Effect from the Milwaukee Reason, because you can get to Chicago and you can be in Paris in 8 hours. And folks, when you tune into the show next, you should be in Paris. You can also catch WWM in Paris on the internet, so you won't be that disconnected.
But you should at least stick around for the reading at Boswell.
Absolutely. Please come April 3rd to the reading at Boswell.
Liam, thanks. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks. Merci.
Milwaukee writer Liam Callanan's latest novel is called Paris by the Book. It comes out tomorrow. He'll read from it and talk more tomorrow evening at Boswell Book Company in an event that also helps celebrate Boswell's 9th anniversary.
But if you just can't wait, here is a little excerpt from Paris by the Book that Liam read for us from the opening.
This is Leah speaking, so you have to imagine a 40-something woman who's owning a bookstore in Paris and has lost her husband and is not sure where her kids are right now. I've long considered the front of our bookstore a trap, one carefully set. This is as it must be. Although we are in the wearyingly popular Marais district, we are in the lower Marais, closer to the Seine but farther from the falafel stands and creperies, the pedestrian streets and thus the crowds and thus customers. One side of our block is almost entirely taken up with the blank back wall of a monastery, which may or may not be occupied. Despite all the bells, I've never seen a monk on the sidewalk. Opposite the monastery, a succession of shops like ours, peering out from the ground floors of anonymous, flat-front buildings in various shades of cream, forever wizening yellow. High above, zinc roofs slowly bruise black. Windows shrug away shutters. Here and there appear flowers or their remains. So too wrought iron railings or their remains. And our store, bright red, like an apple, a wound.
Writer Liam Callanan reading from Paris by the Book.